Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. It is Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's Wednesday. It is the 15th of October, and it is very nice to have you with us. Good morning. We welcome your comments on all the topics that we're going to talk about. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we'd love to hear from you on the myriad of topics that we will discuss this morning. We'll try to get to many, many topics. We didn't get to that many yesterday. We'll try to get to a lot today.
Good.
I promised. Good, says Rosemary. Let me introduce our panel to you. The first voice you heard, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
Good morning. And newsman Ray Graff is here.
Good morning.
And, of course, WAMC's Alan Chartok is here leading the pack. Good morning, sir.
Oh, yes. Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Have you all read your copy of the governor's book?
Oh, interesting. Interesting that you say that. Because yesterday he was, or this morning, I never remember what I'm reading in the middle of the night, but there was a quote from him in which he said he's not sure whether his father's name was better or worse for him. I mean, probably worse that he had the Cuomo name in terms of his politics. I have to tell you, I am infuriated by that. I mean, I'm really infuriated by that because, you know, the fact that he's the governor is obviously due to the Cuomo name. The fact that he's being even mentioned as a presidential thing is the Cuomo name. The fact that he was in the cabinet was clearly because they were making peace with the Cuomos. The Clintons and the Cuomos were working things out. So I don't know where he gets off saying something like that. Just don't get it.
The new book is out. It's called All Things Possible, and it was originally supposed to come out in August. It was released officially yesterday. He had a book signing, I believe, last night. We'll have another one today in New York City. And people, I guess the New York Times got a copy early last week, and then most people are just getting to go through it today.
And he really mixed it up. The New York Times piece, the New York Times people who interviewed him were hysterical, and they said things to him like, "You used to be called the Prince of Darkness. You know, is that true?" And he gave a clever answer, whatever. Then he said in the book, apparently I have not read it, it was that arrogance was his problem. Arrogance was past tense his problem. This the guy who stands up and says, "I'm disbanding the Moreland Act Commission," in the middle of its work. And when somebody says to him, "Well, how can you do that? They haven't finished their work yet," he says, "You know, it's my commission. I can do whatever I want with it." That is not arrogant. Not.
All in the past for him. I haven't gotten it yet, but I will. And I was leafing through the material that's out there. I wanted the personal part about his marriage and his relations with his kids.
I was sad, angry, scared, alone. Separately, my political debacle and divorce were each devastating. Together, the combination felt dreadful.
Very moving.
Thank you.
Probably true, though.
Oh, I would imagine.
Yeah.
After 13 years of marriage and truly stressful times, I knew the ties that bound us together had frayed, but I hoped we could work through what I saw as a difficult time, not an end. Obviously, I was in denial, and Carrie's mind, she had left already. That's the kind of stuff we want to read, right?
That's what I want to read, yes.
You know, and then what was another major mistake and a sin of arrogance was the fact that he ran against Carl McCall. You will remember that.
Yes.
At the last minute, he comes running in. When McCall has it all wrapped up and says he's going to run against them. Now, I had had a radio show with Mario Cuomo for many years, which I loved doing.
Me and Mario.
Me and Mario, and before that, the Capital Connection. We just changed the name after he got to be, wasn't governor anymore. And on April 1st of that very year, can't remember when, I went on TV, because I did TV every night, and I announced, April Fool's, Andrew Cuomo has dropped out saying that Carl McCall is the better man. Well, I got a telephone call from the governor doing what any father would do for his child, being very, very angry. And that was the end of me and Mario. That was how it ended during that time. Now Andrew comes out in the book and says this was a big mistake and it was part of his arrogance. You see the issue?
Interesting.
Meaning he believes he should have stayed in the race.
No. Meaning he believes he never should have run against Carl McCullough.
Oh, in the first place.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing.
I got you.
Which is what I said on the television.
Maybe however, there'll be a recap, Alan.
However, I was consigned to, you know, whatever. Then one of the Cuomo people, who he's very close to, came to me and said he wants to start the show again. And I said, no, that's enough. I don't remember how many years, but it was a lot of years. I said, that's enough.
No possibility for reprise with Cuomo, too.
Well, I'm not allowed to talk about that because when you talk to Andrew, he says to you, let's keep all of this off the record. So if I were to tell you right now something like that they proposed that, if I were to tell you something like that,
right.
That would be telling and that would be on the record as opposed to off the record. So I can't tell you that.
I understand.
We got it. My interest in is this is timing. I found this interesting the entire time that this book was going to come out 2 or 3 weeks before Election Day. I mean, again, it was supposed to come out earlier. It was delayed. Obviously, it's a tactical decision of when you release it. But you release it, and I think in anybody's mind, whether you're cynical or not, This is a political biography that is looking to put your name on a national stage.
Well, I think that's right, and it doesn't hurt on the state stage.
Well, no, certainly not. But it moves the debate from the political to what Rosemary was saying. Instead of, you know, well, tell us about the marriage, tell us about this, tell us about that.
But there's a much more juicier part of all of this.
Well, that's obviously what we want.
And there
talk
are
about.
Some names I never mention. Because my lips are sealed. But just let's say that when Andrew Cuomo became the governor, he had a very close relationship with the Murdoch people over there and with one of the, you know, guys who carries the weight there. And that fellow announced he was going to have a book of his own on Cuomo. And the Cuomo people said they were going to cooperate with it. Then along comes Cuomo's very good move, which was the gun control thing, which I thought was one of his few real profiles in courage.
The SAFE Act, right?
What'd you say?
The SAFE Act.
The SAFE Act.
Yep.
And I say yeah. And I said that. I wrote a column about it. He called me about it. He praised me for having written the column. And I can only say that this guy who was going to write the book turned wild dog on Cuomo, the Post reporter, and Cuomo then goes and knew that when that book came out, it was going to be all about how bad Andrew was, that according to this reporter. So along comes the governor, and in a brilliant strategic move, goes to the publishers, the same publisher who was going to publish the other guy's book, and says, I'd like to offer you my book. I like to think that what he was really saying is, you want my book or you want the reporter's book? They said, oh, we'll take your book. And the other guy disappears. That book never is happening, although he got some money for it, I'm sure. But it didn't happen. Strategically, if ever I saw a brilliant Machiavellian move, that was it.
Do you think that books do make a difference in an election? I can't even get people to read, you know, voters' guides. They actually read books?
But they may read about books. First of all, they sell a lot of books. Secondly, they may read about books. So they go to... So last night he was on Letterman, and he gave the 10 whatever that guy does.
Yeah.
I've never seen it because I've never been up.
You've
that
never
late.
Seen Letterman?
No, not never because I've never up that late.
He's only been on for 32 years.
Right.
How about Jack Parr?
Yeah, I remember him pretty well.
Yeah.
And I remember Johnny well. So anyway, that's it. I mean, you know, this guy is quite a political positioner, Cuomo, and as Joe suggests, it may be a campaign biography. It may be, and I worry that Hillary might not run. In which case, I think Andrew would be in it. I think he would run. And so it comes out now. Everybody needs a book. We all know that. But the New York Daily News today has a a wonderful cartoon in it, in which it shows Cuomo telling all, but not talking to any reporters, and not having any extended conversations, and certainly not doing a lot of major debates with his opponent, Rob Astorino.
There is the there's also this great thing in the mentioned Ken Lovett, but there's this great story that Ken Lovett tells about in his new memoir. Governor Cuomo accuses a reporter of breaking New York law against eavesdropping after one of Cuomo's aides accidentally allowed him to listen in on a private campaign meeting 4 years ago. The memoir was released yesterday. The incident took place during Cuomo's gubernatorial run in 2010. Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News had placed a call to the cell phone of Cuomo campaign aide Josh Vlasto. In a Tuesday story in the Daily News, Lovett recalled that Vlasto, who was in the middle of a meeting with Cuomo and other campaign advisors, meant to send Lovett straight to voicemail, but instead unintentionally connected the call. Lovett did not alert Vlasto to his error. Instead, the reporter listened and took notes in the meeting, during which Cuomo fumed colorfully about how to respond to a recent attack from his Republican opponent. Is there a journalist in this room who would have hung up that phone?
No, sir.
No. And apparently,
forget journalists. Is there a human in this world that would have hung up that phone?
Lovett, who is one of my great heroes and is on the Capitol Connection all the time and who is here all of the time and is really, you know, a self-deprecating guy. He's a terrific guy. How is the guy going to let him know? And by the way, he got a lot of calls saying you could be arrested for this, for listening in on a conversation.
It's crazy. Yeah.
And, you know, basically the message back was, go arrest me.
Yeah, there's no way.
Go arrest me.
No way, that's illegal.
Cuomo. And how could Vlasto have done? He puts the phone down, and even if Ken Lovett were yelling, hey, I'm listening, nobody would have heard it.
Hey! So Vlasto didn't realize it until he looked down and saw that he had a 57-minute phone call.
And I'm sure that the governor said, let it go. You know, I mean, when Vlasto offered to resign, and the governor says, oh, no, let it go. You know, this is what his father used to call post hoc propter hoc. This is stuff you make up afterwards.
Cuomo wrote about the incident in his new book, calling it a curious stunt by Lovett, given that he was violating the New York criminal law against eavesdropping. On Tuesday, Lovett defended his actions and wrote that 4 years ago, Cuomo's team had initially denied that the meeting even took place. He said that Cuomo himself did eventually call back and claim he had broken the law. All I did was make a call, Lovett responded, according to a story Tuesday. According to the reporters,
like bug the place.
Committee for Freedom of the Press, New York state law requires the consent of just one party to a telephone conversation before recording.
That's New York.
Did he record or take notes? That's the question.
He just took notes.
Well, then that's not even germane to the argument.
What they're saying is, even if he had put a tape recorder there and did a transcript,
no, they're saying
still
eavesdropping,
would be
right?
I think it still would be legal.
Right,
in
you
New
said
York.
Recording. Yeah. Yeah.
New York is a one-party state.
Yeah, I think Massachusetts and Maryland may be the only two-party states.
No, there's like 11 of them.
Oh, are there?
There's 11. Yeah, journalists keep track of this.
Wasn't there was one of the ladies in the Bill Clinton affair who recorded something, and it was somebody named Tripp or something like that.
Linda Tripp.
Yeah. Linda
and
Tripp.
And she, I believe, was prosecuted under that.
Yeah. You have to be really careful about recording, but as you say, he didn't record. He took notes and then wrote about it. He embarrassed Mr. Cuomo. That's what he did.
Okay,
that
well,
was
one
his
last
offense.
Thing I want to say. I, as you know, am a Freudian. Not on everything, but I'm a Freudian.
An occasional Freudian.
I'm a Freudian in that I believe...
The accidental Freudian.
There's Ray keeping it real. Okay, so...
Oops,
so,
I slipped. I'm now a Freudian.
Okay, so I'm a Freudian, and I believe Freud was right in one major facet thing, in that he said, character is established by the time you're 4 years old. Right? That's what he said. And that has been substantiated by many people who I've talked to about this, professionals. So we're supposed to sit here and think that Andrew Cuomo's character, arrogance or whatever else, has changed from the beginning to now. In other words, now it's over. There's only one person I have ever seen who I truly believe character changed on. And that was a woman I know very well who was sitting at the top of Windows on the World. The day the planes came in, and the guy she was sitting with, who had just either bought the Windows on the World something, said, I work on Fast Time, took her down in the elevator because he said, come with me, walked out onto the plaza, and the first plane hit. And she was on NPR and everything else. I truly believe that her character may have changed.
Wow.
All her colleagues were still up there. It was a terrible time.
Wow.
We're gonna take a break in just a second, and we'll catch up with everything we have to do. But if you're Rob Astorino, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because everybody's talking about the governor, even if it's somewhat negatively.
Nobody's talking about him.
But everyone's talking about the governor.
And nobody knows who he is.
Right.
But the margin is still closing right now. Can he win? Absolutely not. Remember I said that today. What's today, the 15th?
Yeah.
Yes, October 15th.
He cannot win.
What was the margin at this time when Pataki finally beat Papa?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
I will look it up.
That up for me.
No, but I know one thing. You've got a good point there, Ray, because almost everybody is saying that the one thing Andrew wants to do is to do better than Papa did in his first term, and Papa blew them away in the first time. And I suspect it's going to be nothing like that, especially because Howie Hawkins himself of the Green Party is tracking at 9 or 10% right now. That's huge.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversations. We would love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. Try to get in as many topics as we can in our few moments left. Supreme Court allows Texas abortion clinics to stay open. The Supreme Court on Tuesday allowed more than a dozen Texas abortion clinics to reopen, blocking a state law that had imposed strict requirements on abortion providers. Had the law been allowed to stand, it would have caused all but 8 of the state's abortion clinics to close and would have required many women to travel more than 150 miles to the nearest abortion provider. The Supreme Court's order, 5 sentences long and with no explanation of the justice's reasoning.
But there were 6, weren't there?
Only six judges.
But 6 is good.
Represents
better than a 5-4 the wrong way, according to Alan.
Yes, according to Alan.
I think that I would like to be happier about this news than I am. This is really a procedural measure that the clinics can get open while the court decides whether they should close for good under the new law. Mm-hmm. So I think a temporary measure at best. Exactly.
Right.
So I think you can get 6 judges who are going to say, "Yeah, let them stay open now. We'll shut them for good later." I think you could still end up 5-4.
You may be right, but I'm projecting here. But I like to think of the case of this guy Michael, who did the deciding vote in New York to pass the abortion law. Mm-hmm. He was a Republican. He's from upstate New York. He was, I believe, Jewish, but in an area which didn't have that many Jews in it. And he stood up tearfully the night before the vote and changed his vote to pass the law, the abortion law in New York State allowing abortion, and said that his kids had called him a dirty word. And I like to think that those justices all have some humanity down somewhere in them that would make them do the same thing.
I so wish you were right. However, this is the Supreme Court that has squelched voter rights.
Yep.
And it has opened the way to a flood of money into our election process that has corrupted the whole thing. I'm not so sanguine.
Mm. Well, you're probably right.
Good word, though. Thank you for saying
that. I like to project myself into it, my own views.
Okay, so we're good on that. Let's move on to another story. Ray, anything you want?
No, I just I'm amused by you saying we're good on that and then moving on. That's
okay.
It's funny. Yeah.
There are some more. Congratulations on the fun drive. Says Gary, the Ebola virus raises an even larger question to me. What happened to the 3,000 military troops that Obama has sent to Africa and on and on?
They're building hospitals.
It's a little too long. Richard says, I believe Ebola should be handled the same way that Tito in Yugoslavia, with finally eradicating smallpox by a total quarantine of any area with active cases. No one gets out till the sickness stops. Unfortunately, there's no vaccine to halt the spread as was available then. And then Rich castigates us and says, you should spend time on the elections in New York State, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, and how it can affect your listeners. States need to help each other. Cuomo wanted to combine government at all levels. What happened to that? That's from Rich. I must say, Rich, let's be fair about this. We have Midday Magazine every day. We have the afternoon Northeast Report. And believe me, we have people all over the place, and they're talking about much of this all the time.
So when we look at one of the other topics that we want to talk about is what has been going on with – hold on. Let me bring it up here as I just had it on the page, and then I lost it.
By the way, did I do something wrong there? I thought maybe I shouldn't have read the letters. I thought I signaled to Joe that there was some more letters.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I just didn't want to interfere with what the train of thought was.
No.
The flow of
I don't think we have a train.
No,
do
it killed a couple minutes.
Well, in that case,
In
that case, Peggy Joe says, as a former health educator, you should be honored by your mature conversations regarding the situation. Okay. All right. I didn't use her whole name. At the end, it says, don't use my name. Okay. And that's it.
Okay, so the other issue I wanted to talk about was President Obama has decided to wait until after next month's midterm elections to nominate a replacement for Attorney General Eric Holder. White House officials said on Tuesday, effectively ensuring that the choice does not get mired in campaign politics. But the choice is always going to get mired in politics, isn't it?
Yes, and there's a very good chance that the Senate is going to go Republican. In fact, the Times guru now has it, I think, at 70%.
A 70% chance?
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? As a political observer?
What do I know?
Some note?
What do I know? I know that when I look at these individual races, it does look like the Republicans are ahead in the key races. So therefore, if that happens now, Joe's taking this up right now, indicates to me that, you know, they could try to get, because the Senate in the majority will have to approve whoever Obama puts up for Attorney General. And I'm sure he said he wanted to do it as quick as possible. But remember, they still will have a chance in the lame duck session after the Republicans, take over, which won't happen until January. So they'll have a chance to confirm after the election.
I don't know. The whole timing of the announcement of Holder's leaving, it flummoxed me. I remain confused about that timing. Of course you didn't want to do it before the midterms. And if you wanted to ensure that the replacement would get in, shouldn't it have started earlier this year rather than counting on a lame duck session? We haven't even heard any candidates yet very much, have we, since the first initial speculation.
Do we know more about the dynamics of that decision? And was it a unilateral decision by Holder, or was he asked by the administration to say, hey, I think it's time?
Holder has said from the beginning that he wanted to leave it about this time. It does not appear to be. I wondered about that, too. Had he done something and it was going to come out? But no, he has wanted to leave for some time. Although he'll stay until there's a replacement. So he obviously could have been talked into
something. So in other words, till the end of President Obama's term.
That may be.
Yeah.
When it seemed as though when this initially happened, as we mentioned, that there was going to be an announcement right away or very soon.
The president so indicated.
And the president said this. So at what point do you assume he has a name and he's just waiting then?
Well, he could. I mean, look, if I'm the president and I got to get an attorney general in there, I find a friendly Republican. That's what I would do. I mean, I would find some Republican who has my values, and there are plenty of them, and you appoint them, and then they have it's a much easier ask than if you want some more motivated Democrat. I think he can probably do it. I think the question is going to be whether he wants to do that or whether he wants to try to, hammer it through.
I thought you were going to say something.
No, I'm not. I'm just shaking my head. Either way, either one of those scenarios seems very unpleasant to me. Not the best use of his very limited time.
Can you imagine if there was a Supreme Court opening right now?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
No, I can't. In fact, I can't even imagine a Supreme Court opening in the next 2 years.
No. And if it opens in the next 2 years, it's not going to be one of the five Republicans.
No.
It's going to
be Ruth.
Yeah. Well, it could be her. You know, you never know.
Yeah, it's true.
You never know who drops dead at what moment.
That's really good. Political Observer Alan Chartock.
You never know when they're going to drop dead.
Well, in the middle of the night, you don't know. You know, Jim Fix is out there running, runs 10 miles every day, and he dies. You know, you just don't know.
Yeah, when the Reaper is ready, you're gone. That's a good point.
This is it. This is just it. There was a great assistant principal named Kate McDermott in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. She's gone now. But she used to say,
that's, as is Jim Fix in 1984.
Yeah. She used to say, that's it.
Yeah.
That's all she said.
That's it.
She'd Yul Gibbons, gone.
And then
right?
She'd say, that's it.
That's interesting.
Do you think so?
Marginally.
Keep it real.
All right.
I think we have time for one more topic, and certainly at the rate we're going, what's not to want to get into here? Did you all see this? Did you see the story on the guardrails?
The guardrails. Fascinating story. Oh,
so it turns out that the guardrails may kill you, right?
Yeah.
They turn into spears.
Yeah.
It's bad. And so now the states are saying, state transportation officials in Missouri now have said they've had enough and that they have malfunctioned, turning the rails into spears when cars hit them and injuring people instead of cushioning the blow. And now it joins Nevada and Massachusetts. Then they're blaming the guardrails for several deaths throughout the country.
Yes. Deeply disturbing. I mean, I drive in Eastern Europe and in Africa where there are no guardrails.
Yeah.
You're like right on the edge of a cliff.
Right.
And I always said that, you know, guardrails are one of the things that they should be copying from Americans. Forget jeans. Forget music. Use guardrails. They're very nice. And now this.
Well, I mean, given the choice of going over a cliff and perhaps being injured or killed by a guardrail, I'm going to take the guardrail.
Really? I don't know. The idea that you could hit something and it pierces through your iron car, your steel car, and can break a bone.
Plastic.
That's
plastic.
Scary.
Or
plastic car. Plastic car? Okay.
Plastic car.
Or my car is metal.
Or is it possible that we could come up with a better guardrail?
Oh, all right. Here's the real issue in this story is that there have been concerns about these railheads, this change in design. Mm-hmm. The end of the thing comes off, and that's what turns it into a spear. Yeah. There have been concerns about this from the beginning. There have been warnings about it. And once again, just like the ignitions on the GM cars, no one who should be looking at this apparently has looked at it. They've not said, there's even some concerns that the company who made them did not report this change in design, as they should have, to federal regulators. So it's not just the bad guardrails, that's bad enough, but it's also, once again, our system of regulating and protecting cars seems to be faulty.
So should we panic about this like we are about Ebola?
No, be more worried about Ebola.
Okay. So small potatoes in general.
Or as the officials will say, if you're not going to get into a car accident, you don't have to worry about it.
Okay.
There it is.
And on that note,
don't panic.
We end this morning.
Whoa.
Okay. Yay.
Thank you very much, Alan and Ray and Rosemary. We thank you. We'll be back tomorrow for another discussion. We urge you to keep your letters coming, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.